This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's been a little over a month since President Trump took office, and it's been quite a hectic stretch. He's already signed more than two dozen executive orders. He's also replaced his national security advisor and ramped up his battle with the media and the court system. And joining us to discuss President Trump's first month in office are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It's only been a month?
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
My goodness.
Before we get into that discussion, though, Ken, what's the trivia question you've got for us today?
Well, it may not be the toughest one, but, you know, with all this focus on immigration and a new Trump executive order that's probably going to come down in the next couple of days about who can come into this country, I guess the trivia this week's trivia question is, who was the last mayor of Cincinnati, speaking of immigration, who was born in another country?
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
All right.
Last mayor of Cincinnati born in another country. If you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. The first correct caller will win a political junkie button, 513-419-7100. And oh my goodness, like you were saying, so much has happened in this whirlwind of a first month. So where do you start?
Well, I think you start with, where is Donald Trump in all of this? Where is Donald Trump's numbers, and how does he see his success rate and failure rate? And for Donald Trump, who says that he's doing what he promised he would do, that's absolutely true. I mean, for people to say, oh my goodness, I can't believe he's named so-and-so to this administration post or this cabinet position, but he said he would do that. For all the people, for all the things he said about rolling back immigration and trade deals and the oil pipeline, things like that, he said he would do that. So I don't know why. I mean, I understand people may not agree with it. Of course, people do agree with it at the same time, but they shouldn't be surprised. What they should be surprised, though, is the fact that there are things that don't work for him. The outbursts of paranoia and anger and peevishness, that one would think that he has everything in the world, he could get past it, but he doesn't seem to be able to get past it. And I'm talking about attacks on the press, things like that.
That's the thing that really amazes me, because that's almost on a daily basis, talking about, you know, the press was so horrible, the enemy of the people. That, when I saw that one just knocked me over. No president has ever talked like that. There have been presidents. I mean, every president has.
Yeah, put it in some context, because there have always been battles between the press and
obviously.
The president.
It's an adversarial relationship, and they don't like the press. But to talk about the press in terms of being an enemy of the people, that to me is just like beyond the pale.
It sends chills, absolutely. We know about Nixon's enemies list and how Nixon dealt with the press and hated the press. And we also know that Barack Obama probably had more subpoenas out on more journalists than any president in history, perhaps. So we know, as Howard absolutely correctly says, there is that adversarial relationship, and there should be. But it's that Donald Trump cannot begin a sentence or cannot begin his breakfast without talking about how evil, how dishonest, how corrupt, and as Howard says, the fact that they're enemies. And when you pit us against them and the fake news and the lying media, what you're doing is, of course, just like when he questioned, you know, the accuracy, the fairness of the vote, he puts these questions about democratic institutions in our mind. And only he, Donald Trump, with his direct approach with tweeting, gives you the fair and honest version, and the media gives the incorrect version.
Everything else is fake. Everything else is fake news. I mean, it's unequivocally fake. according to
him.
And
why does he have to do that? Why does he have to? He has everything. He won. He may not have won the popular vote, but who cares? That didn't stop George W. Bush, you know, from becoming the president he was. It had nothing to do with it. But he's so obsessed with that image and criticism, and he's spent as much, I mean, he's spent more time talking about Saturday Night Live than he did about the North Korea missile test.
Exactly.
I don't understand why, well, you know, who knows? I mean, I'm just going to say, I could give you a list of 10,000 things. I don't understand why he does it, because, again, he won and he has all this power behind him and obviously a support of a good chunk of this country. But
does it go back to this is doing what he said he was going to do? I mean, we knew he was going to be very confrontational with the press.
Well, yeah, I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes, you know, to some sort of, you know, I mean, he really wants to destroy the reputation of the media in general.
So fairness, the media does that to themselves
and
absolutely, as well.
No question about that. They're asking for it on many days. But he's made a point that, you know, he's going to be the authority. He's going to be the one that people believe and not these horrible, evil media people.
And just the fact that every conversation will somehow go back to Hillary Clinton and the fact that she should be in jail, right, and the fact that the reason she got the popular vote was that 3 to 5 million people voted illegally voted illegally. Go past that and talk about what you're going to do. I mean, he does a lot of that. But, you know, it's interesting. Last weekend, he held this rally in Melbourne, Florida, and he packed them in. I mean, there were like 9,000 people in this airport hangar. It was a huge, enthusiastic crowd. But again, it was also, most of it was about the grievances he has about the media and the Democrats and Obama. And, you know, I mean, Why do you do it?
I understand, he plans to do those kind of public rallies on a regular basis.
He lives for it. I mean, he loves
it.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to have a big crowd of people cheering him.
So I'm confused about the order. Is he returning to his campaign mode, or did he never leave it in the first place?
Well, he left it for most of a month, you know, given with all these executive orders. But again, you know, I mean, when he had Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer and even Melissa McCarthy out there defending him as, you know, press spokespeople, when those didn't seem to work for him, he just seemed to be, he'll just say, well, you know, something, they don't represent me the way I could represent me. And so he'll have these rallies, these campaign rallies. And I think it was paid for, or half paid for, by the Donald Trump for President Committee, not the White House. So doesn't feel like a campaign. It is a campaign. And I noticed there were a lot of signs that said Blacks for Trump 2020. So obviously we're talking about the election.
So Ken, give us the trivia question again. We've got a few folks lined up to try it. Give us the question first and let's see if we can get an answer for this.
Okay, with all the concern about immigration, who was the last mayor of Cincinnati born in another country?
Okay. Mike in Clifton. Mike, do you know the answer?
Well, you know, originally I said to you...
Stick with your original. Guys, stay with the original.
Original now.
Yep. Yeah. Can't shift. Oh.
Oops.
He gave up on us. Okay.
You know what they do? A lot of people will call in with an incorrect answer on purpose and then say, okay, here's the real answer.
But in fairness, you got to give us the first answer that you gave to our call screener. So thanks for trying anyhow. Let's see if Deborah in Northside knows the answer. Hi, Deborah. Deborah, are you still there?
I think Mike just announced his engagement to Deborah.
Okay, yeah. So we...
Hello.
Oh, there she is. Deborah, who, what's the answer to the question?
Oh, yes. I mean, I don't know why you didn't hear me. I said Jerry Springer.
Oh, okay. Jerry Springer. Is that Ken?
Jerry Springer is the correct answer.
That's
well,
right.
Yay!
There you go, Deborah.
Congratulations, Deborah.
Very good.
I mean, Jerry Springer was born in London, which a lot of people consider a separate country, even though they got their language from us. But he was born in London in 1944. Jerry Springer is the correct answer.
Absolutely. And Deborah, stay on the line.
Could I say something that Mr. Springer said that's very beautiful and encouraging?
Okay.
Sure.
When he had his radio show on Air America, he said he was a kid coming into New York Harbor and looked at the buildings and was confused. asked his mother what it was, and she told him, "Ein Tag alles, one day it will be everything to you." And I thought that was great.
That is. That's very good.
And thank you for sharing that, Deborah. And stay on the line, too, so we can get information on where to send your prize. So congratulations again. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Deborah was not the only one who got the answer right.
Oh, go away, Howard. He always has to rub that in.
I was convinced Howard thought it was Roxanne Qualls. But you know something that's interesting hearing what Deborah had to say about Jerry Springer? He does remind me in a way of Donald Trump, but I think there were always been two different Jerry Springers. There was the carnival barker on TV with his outrageousness on television, but he was a serious guy. I mean, he ran for governor. He was on the city council. Of course, he paid by check. He was somebody who was a serious guy who had serious policy positions, and there were two Jerry Springers. I'm not convinced there were two Donald Trumps.
Well, you know, and there's still two Jerry Springers, because when Jerry comes to town and when you talk to him, and, you know, there's part of him that really still wants to be like a senator or a governor, or, you know, he wants to be in politics. But, you know, he's making a gazillion dollars a year. I mean, he just can't give it up.
Well, so did Donald Trump. But then again, Donald Trump is still apparently making gazillion dollars a year.
Maybe you don't have to give it up.
Right.
How is the Trump administration doing, though, getting its message out? Do you think all the flurry and the activity and the tweeting, you think that actually gets in the way of getting their message out?
Well, and the messengers, too, that are being put out there, Spicer and Kellyanne Conway, I think, and I think you would agree with me, Ken, that she's pretty much being phased out as a spokesperson for this administration.
I've read reports like that. I don't know if it's true or not, but she has not been as visible in the past week or so than she had been earlier. I agree with that.
Well, I mean, there's some news organizations like CNN says, well, we don't want her anymore. Because
Mika Brzezinski basically said that Kellyanne Conway always calls in to invite herself on the show, and we will never have her on the show again because she lies to us and she never tells us the truth, and that's the problem with Kellyanne Conway. I think she's an effective person trying to sell the Trump message. But when she says things, I mean, forget about the alternative facts thing that blew up in her face. But when she says things that she probably knows is not true and that everybody else knows is not true, then what's the point of having her as a guest when you know she's just going to make things up? I know the media, the talk shows, the cables love ratings and they love controversy, but sometimes they get tired of being played for fools.
Oh, well, forgive me if I misquote Mika Brzezinski, but she had the other comment about she was annoyed because she said that the Trump administration is trying to control how people think, and that's our job.
People on this network say stupid things too sometimes.
Yeah. Did she say it's our job to tell what people should think? Is that what she said?
Yeah, meaning the media. And I don't know whether it was just a quick thought coming out where maybe she misspoke and it didn't come out right or what happened. But she's gotten a lot of grief for saying that. So
yeah.
We will continue our conversation with Ken and Howard. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got a call from Regina, and she said that Jerry Springer was born in a refugee camp in London. They were a Jewish family fleeing during World War
II. That is true.
Is that true?
Oh,
okay.
Yes. That's absolutely true.
So quite a story there, actually.
Yeah, they had fled the Nazis, and Jerry was born in London in that camp.
So, Regina, thanks for the extra information. Let's talk to Jay in Northside. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Hey, I've been saving this question for Ken for a while. I know he doesn't like this word, but Between the demonization of the press, the insistence on telling lies, ginning up of enemies, and other things, is it fair to call this president, darn old dump, a fascist yet?
Oh, you got two slams in there at one time. Wow.
Boy, you know, you know something? I mean, I'm not even hesitating for a second. The answer to me is no. I mean, there were things. As this is what I think. If we had the tape ready, I wish we did. But John McCain was basically, you know, when he was talking about when the president came up with these, you know, the press was the enemy of the American people, and he said it conjured up memories of you know, things that happened in the past. He says, right. "I'm not calling Trump a dictator." He didn't use the word fascist, but I'm not calling Trump a dictator. But these are how dictatorships, authoritarian regimes begin. So I would not, absolutely not call him a fascist. And so many references I've seen online to Hitler, I saw them, you know, when Bush was president, when Obama was president, that is just way, way out of line. But there is something that truly concerns me about a disregard for democratic institutions that an authoritarian figure would say, don't believe the press, don't believe the Congress, don't believe the courts. Believe me, and that does trouble me.
Yeah, when the President of the United States talks about a so-called judge in reference to a federal district court judge who ruled against him on the immigration case, that's very frightening.
I mean, it's one thing to disagree with the ruling, and presidents do that. Remember President Obama during a State of the Union message when he criticized the Citizens United case, and you could see Justice Alito.
Well, the whole Supreme Court was sitting there. Yeah, all the justices were sitting there, and he called them out during that speech.
So Alito
was shaking his head saying that's not true. So
yeah. Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was shaking her head too, but I think she fell asleep. I don't think she was shaking her head,
No, I mean, this disrespect for the other institutions of government, that does trouble me.
Checks and balances, absolutely.
Right. And Ken, do you think to some extent you don't like the term fascist being used? Is the name calling, the labeling, is it counterproductive though if you're trying to get your point across?
I think it is. I mean, first of all, I mean, let's just go to the extreme and say Hitler. Well, we all know what Hitler did during his monstrous rule. And so to compare anybody to that is just, you know, beyond the pale. But when you say fascist or when you say communist or whatever you want to say, you basically then suddenly focus on the word and what that word means. Focus on what he's doing. Focus on what is the relationship between the Trump administration and Russia? What did Trump campaign officials do with Russian intelligence officials during the campaign? What role did Russia have in trying to influence the 2016 election? Those are legitimate questions. But when you say fascist, you start to think, well, is he Berlusconi? Is he Mussolini? Is he Tito? I mean, is he, you know, I don't know. Is he Huey Long? I don't know. What you start thinking, you start comparing it, and you lose sight of what's really going on.
Yeah, it just throws the legitimate issues out the window.
Right, it shuts down the conversation
away. And these conversations need to be had.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Ken, you were talking about the Trump's immigration order. We're going to get the version 2.0 this week. What do you know that's going to be different in this new immigration order that is going to be different from the first one that got held up in the courts?
Well, it's my understanding. I mean, we don't know for sure, of course. Obviously, you know, that they were embarrassed by that, even though it's easy to put down the judge and the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco, who also ruled unanimously against it. It's easy to, you know, to be embarrassed about that. But I think they're talking about, well, certainly people with green cards would not be affected. People on planes already headed to the U.S. would not be affected. But obviously, when you start mentioning certain ethnic groups, now, as far as I know, the executive order did not mention Muslims, even though those seven countries were predominantly Muslim countries.
Didn't.
I don't think he mentioned that. But I think they need to get around that kind of leaning towards picking out specific ethnic or religious groups. And of course, while it wasn't mentioned in the first one, I think they'll be more careful about it the second time. It may not be that much different. It may not go into effect much differently than it ordinarily would have. But I think it's the language.
it's going to have to be tailored in order to pass muster in federal court, because obviously that's where it's going.
Yeah, and Ken, are you still with us? I heard some funny yeah. sounds in the background there. Did we lose you?
I don't know. I think we may have.
Yeah, we need to try to reestablish contact with Ken. So, again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Howard, have you heard anything more about this new EO that's coming out on immigration?
Well, pretty much what Ken said. I mean, that's you know, we won't know until we actually see the thing. We know that they're talking about beefing up federal immigration enforcement officers, hiring thousands more to go rounding up people. And that's got a lot of people concerned, not just in the Muslim community, but in the Hispanic community and other parts of the country. And even here in Cincinnati, it has a lot of people upset because they just don't know how far this is going to go in terms of deportation. Now, deportation of large numbers of people is going to take a long time. It's not going to happen overnight.
Now, we do remember, we do know what president deported more people, people here illegally than any other president, don't we?
Yeah.
It was Barack Obama.
Right.
But the thing is, I think the big difference, of course, and we were cut out for a while, so I hope you didn't, I'm not repeating what you said.
No.
But of course, what Trump is what Obama and George W. Bush did was to basically focus on those here illegally who committed serious crimes, or certainly more serious crimes than just, you know, a broken taillight or a speeding ticket.
This seems to be much broader than that, because, I mean, as I said, they're talking about hiring thousands of more federal immigration officers, you know, to go around and basically do a roundup. But if they are going to deport, you know, that many people, this is going to take an awful long time. It's very difficult. And I'm not sure how much help they're going to get out of local law enforcement anywhere in the country, because these people are really not trained in that kind of law enforcement.
And Ken,
but in fairness to Donald Trump, this is exactly what he said he would do.
Absolutely what he does.
And Ken, it's interesting you were bringing up the deportation numbers under President Obama, because the New York Times actually did a side-by-side comparison and found that, you know, initially during the first few weeks of the Trump administration, the numbers were running about the same as they had been under the Obama administration.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. But again,
but he says he's going to ramp it up.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And we've seen in the past week that there have been more people rounded up and deported, and that number is obviously going to increase.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk to Jimmy in Lincoln Heights. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know what? I'm listening to the conversation. I'm a Vietnam vet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been around quite a while. I'm 70 plus. And I just want to tell you, I was against the things Trump was talking about when he ran when he campaigned. And I was against him when he got in office. But however, I realized something. Mr. Trump, he's not a politician. He's a corporate executive. He's a businessman. And for us to keep calling him a fascist or a racist and things like that, we have to understand, this man is not diplomatic at all. He has no diplomacy.
Yeah, he's used to being in charge. Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So for us to call him all these names, then if he was a diplomat, a politician, if he was an experienced politician and he'd done these things, we could understand him being headed for fascism, a dictatorship, or being experienced and doing the things that he's doing.
Well,
the man don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, well, Jimmy,
he's not as political. So we should leave him alone, watch what he's doing. And when he was campaigning, he said he's going to do the things that he's doing now. He said he's going to do them. So now we're all upset about it. And we're saying he's this, he's that. And everybody want to come down on him. Well, really, most corporate presidents and CEOs and big corporate leaders, they ought to now realize that when you sit back and run your mouth and talk about what you're going to do for this country and what you would do for this country if you was leader, you should let what Mr. Trump is doing give you an example. It ain't like what you think. You cannot run the country like you run a business.
Well, that Jimmy, you're absolutely right about that. You can't run this country the way you run a business. And I think that's one of his problems initially coming into this office, having come from this, you know, big development background, a person who has, you know, made millions or billions of dollars over the years and spent billions of dollars over the years. And he's not used to having people say no to him. He's been surrounded
by— What I say goes.
I'm the boss. I'm the boss. You know, you don't say no to me. Well, this is a different thing. Being president of the United States, people do say no to you. Congress sometimes says no to you. The courts say no to you. The American people sometimes say no to you. And he's not used to that.
Here's my question, though. I guess following up on what Jimmy said and what Howard just said, why can't you run the country the way you ran a business? And of course, yes, I mean, as Trump was CEO of Trump Industries, there were no checks and balances. He didn't have to answer to anybody. But if he feels that he has the 44% or whatever, maybe even 40% of the country behind him, if he has the power of tweeting, and if he still has a Republican Congress, as we saw during the cabinet confirmation fights, except for Andrew Puzner, who withdrew, they backed every nominee that Trump had. Why can't he do, I mean, I don't know how long he can get away with this, but why can't he do what he's doing now? Because according to him, what he's doing is working. And according to the, you know, what he's getting from these rallies in Florida, they're working. So what's to stop him from continuing this? I just thought I'd throw that out.
Okay.
Good
point. You threw that out. Good point, Ken. You mentioned Andrew Puzder. What was the reason he removed his name from consideration as labor secretary?
Well, there was a bunch of things. I mean, of course, he treated his employees pretty poorly, according to reports. As labor secretary, he opposed not only increasing the minimum wage, but he opposed overtime laws, which is not good.
Yeah.
He is also, apparently, in 1990, his wife went on the Oprah show in disguise and talked about how he was mistreating her. Now, she since recanted that. They're since divorced, I believe. But, I mean, those videos... The opponents were ready to blanket the airwaves with those videos of Mrs. Puzder at the time coming on these terrible things he was doing. And, you know, something, and when Mitch McConnell, and when he didn't withdraw on his own, Mitch McConnell said, look, you don't have the votes. I mean, yeah, I don't know why they couldn't, I don't know why they couldn't vet this in advance, but you don't have the votes. There are going to be at least 8 Republicans who vote against him, in addition to all the, 48 of the Democrats. So, you know, it's time to get out, and that's what he did.
Okay, so he saw the signs, or at least was told what the signs were.
Yeah, he was told what the signs were.
Okay. What about the now, it's Alexander Acosta is the new nominee. What do we know about him?
He's the new national security advisor. No, I'm sorry. This is for the
to replace Andrew Puzder.
No, he has a much different relationship, a much different reputation. I mean, I don't know much about him other than the fact that all those red flags against Puzder are not there. It's interesting how the president, in his second go around, when you get a second chance,
he does a lot better, doesn't he?
Yes, doesn't he? I was thinking of when Michael Flynn, when he withdrew as a national security advisor,
or
was forced out. And McMaster's apparently is widely respected,
yes,
completely independent.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing, though. You could be independent, you could have a great reputation or not, if you're looking at Betsy DeVos and Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA. They may not have the greatest reputations, but they got through. But whether they're conservative or not, or popular or not, what autonomy is Trump going to give them? Because as we've seen with foreign policy, basically, this is an administration that does foreign policy by tweet. It's not that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, is announcing anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't even meet with the guys coming to the White House. It's just that Trump, he'll just say something that NATO is terrible and Putin is a pal. And there are so many countries around the world, and Australia, the hanging up on the Australian Prime Minister, basically the things he's doing, and all, and also that, that terrible massacre in Sweden. And Sweden, why would they cover up the Bowling Green massacre? Why would they cover that up? But anyway, I'm making that up. But the point is that all these things that he's saying, he's doing on his own, away from the State Department, away from the Defense Department. It's a remarkable show of leadership by a president who clearly does not want to delegate his powers.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the first president of the United States to be his own Secretary of State. I mean, that's happened before, but he is taking it to an extreme, I think. Isn't Tillerson going to Mexico?
He's going to Mexico, yes. Right. He is actually meeting with, let's see here. Yep, he's going to Mexico, and he's going to meet with a number of different Mexican officials, along with Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly.
Yeah.
So let's.
I just wonder if hopefully the wall won't be built while he's there.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Al in Indian Hill. Hi, Al. Thank you for joining us. So, Al, are you there?
Al.
Okay. So we don't have Al with us. We'll take a quick break here. We'll get back with Ken and Howard, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking about President Trump's first month in office with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, members of Congress, when they've been out meeting with their constituents and holding these town hall meetings,
or not.
Yeah, or not holding, as the case may be. Yeah, they've been running into a lot of anger and hostility.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, they're really, most of them that I've seen, and particularly around here, are very reluctant to hold any kind of town hall, real town hall session, where anybody in the public can show up and question, because there have been some very rowdy crowds that have showed up at different forums around the country when members of Congress, particularly Republican members, with people who are telling them, don't you dare mess with Affordable Care Act. Immigration is very important to us, and we're opposed to Trump's immigration policies. And they're just not holding these town hall meetings. They're doing teleconferences where you can basically control the audience that you're talking to, and you can kind of weed out the people who are going to cause you trouble. And it's become, I think, very difficult for Republican members of Congress to go out in public in their own districts because they are getting so much heat from anti-Trump people.
Of course, a lot of these anti-Trump people are copying or mimicking what the Tea Party did in 2009 and 2010.
Sure.
And basically what they were doing in the advent of the Obama presidency is they were protesting and making a lot of noise and making lives difficult for the Democrats, even some liberal Republicans as well, on the Affordable Care Act and whatever the Democrats were pushing through in Congress. It's not exactly the same what they're trying to do, because the Tea Party was really not only trying to diminish and hurt the Obama administration and the Democrats, but they were also out to get the Republicans as well. You know, the Arlen Specters or the Charlie Crist of the world,
right.
Those moderate rhino Republicans. Who were pushed out of the party. I don't think you're seeing as much of this directed at Democrats when you see these progressives protesting right now, but there is still some anger, you know, when you have the Joe Manchins of West Virginia and the Heidi Heitkamps of North Dakota, those Joe Donnelly of Indiana, those kind of Democrats who vote for Trump. Cabinet appointees. There is some anger out there. You know, two Democrats,
yes.
Heitkamp and Manchin, voted for Scott Pruitt to head up the EPA. Now, both North Dakota and West Virginia have strong coal interests in those states, and that could be part of it. But there are a lot of Democrats who said, my goodness, what's the point of being a Democrat if you're going to allow the Andy Puzders and the Betsy DeVosses and the, you know, and the Scott Pruitts into the administration?
Yeah, and Ken was talking about how a lot of members of Congress are just shutting down these meetings, which or going to telecom, which is unfortunate. I think it was Tom Cotton of Arkansas got confronted at one of his meetings, and you know he faced up to it. And I think he gave a pretty good answer, because what he said was, "I don't agree with Trump on everything. If Trump is doing something that's going to benefit Arkansas, I'll be for it. If he's going to do something that doesn't benefit Arkansas, I'm going to be against him." Which, you know, I think that was a pretty straight up answer. So I got to give him some credit there.
I agree with that, but it's interesting when you think of Jason Chaffetz in Utah. I mean, I think there are 9 Democrats in the state of Utah, and yet there were thousands or hundreds at least who really came out to a Jason Chaffetz town hall meeting and really let them know about the Affordable Care Act and what's going on with Russia and things like that. And to some of the Republicans' credit, they are saying, look, I'll agree with Trump when he's right and I'll disagree with him when he's wrong. But to hide under the desk, you know, that's something that, you know, you were talking about profiles and courage. Those members of Congress who are hiding from their constituents, they're not showing much of that.
No, and there are some who are hiding, and there's no question about it. But then the Republicans and the Trump people are claiming that in some of these cases, these are paid protesters. They're, you know, being organized by Organizing for America, the old Obama organizing group, and that it's not real. It's not real grassroots anger that's being shown. I tend to doubt that, though.
Yeah, exactly. And the left was saying back in 2009, saying that those demonstrators who came were and Koch brothers, you know, paid by the Koch brothers. So both sides make that claim. Absolutely.
Yeah. On one side, it's George Soros paying for it. And the other side, it's the Koch brothers, you know.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And let's talk to Susan in Butler County. Good afternoon, Susan.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. My question is a little off the topic. I was calling to ask the political junkie what his take is on DNC chair selection being so far to the left and how he thinks that will affect the Democratic Party.
Okay. That's not off the topic. That's actually a good question. Thank you very much, Susan.
You're welcome.
It's a great question. Yeah. It's a great question. The reason I like it so much is because, remember, the Republicans didn't know what the meaning of Mitt Romney's defeat in 2012. Did it mean that they should embrace more Latino voters, more female voters? And, of course, Trump said, you don't have to do that. You know, you do it the way I did it, we could win. There are a lot of Democrats who don't know what Hillary Clinton's defeat really meant. Is it because the Democrats ignored the blue-collar, working-class white votes in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, or is it because they ignored the Bernie Sanders argument that it should be standing up to the corporate wing of politics, both Democrats and Republicans? And so Susan is exactly right. On Saturday in Atlanta, the Democrats are going to elect a new national chair. Of course, we remember what happened to the last national chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was caught on WikiLeaks basically saying that, you know, even though we're supposed to be neutral, we'll do everything we can to help Hillary Clinton and hurt Bernie Sanders. She was forced out. Donna Brazile didn't help herself either as the interim director. And now it looks like the choice for the Democrats is between Keith Ellison and Tom Perez. And it's exposing the differences, the divisions in the Democratic Party all over again.
Yep.
Keith Ellison, look, he happens to be, and I don't know why, maybe I focus on this too much, but he happens to be one of the few Muslim members of Congress.
Right.
And I point that out because you know how Donald Trump feels about Muslims. Believe it or not, David Duke tweeted yesterday that his favorite in the nomination for DNC chair is Keith Ellison. And you could say, wait a second, what? But that's vintage David Duke. Of course he would love to run against a Muslim head of the DNC. The other person is Tom Perez. So you have Keith Ellison, who's backed by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but also people like Chuck Schumer and others, whereas Tom Perez, who was the labor secretary in the Obama administration, he's backed by Joe Biden and Eric Holder and many, and people
Obama
like Clinton.
People
and exactly. So and that division
people.
that we That division we saw at the Democratic Convention in 2016
it's playing itself out all over again.
Has not gone away. And in answer to Susan's question, which I don't know how to answer it, do the Democrats, should they go after those working class, middle class, blue collar whites that they ignored in, you know, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, things like that, or do they go further to the left? And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what they decide. But either way, the divisions in the Democratic Party have not gone away.
And Ken, the process, it's what, it's like
447.
Okay,
right. 447.
Who will be voting on this?
Right.
Yeah. And these are the Democratic state chair and vice chair of every state, the Democratic National Committee men and women in every state, and also former Democratic officials. I think like Bill Clinton is a member of the DNC and former presidents and former senators. So it's 447, you know, I mean, those, I think there are eight or so candidates running. Howard Dean yesterday endorsed the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who he says is a real outsider, unlike the other two.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not sure. I just wonder if the divisions disappear. I mean, I think sometimes I think we're making too big of a deal of it. But I think with being on the outs and nobody seeing Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer as the leader of the Democratic Party, with Donald Trump as president, it's very possible that whomever it is could be the spokesperson for the party in the next 2 years to come.
Is there any sense of which way this is going?
I don't know. They're both claiming, you know, a lot.
Because I've heard Tom Perez, but I've heard other people say, no, Keith Ellison, it's...
Keith Ellison says he has 200 committed supporters. Tom Perez says he has about 180. You need 200. Well, obviously, you need a majority. They're not going to get it on the first ballot, but if it's 447, so you need 220, you know, 224 DNC members to put you over the top. And it may go on, but it's Saturday in Atlanta, and it will be the big news of the day until the next tweet, I guess, coming from the White House.
Yeah. And it is going to be a close one, and it'll probably be multiple ballots, I would think.
Yeah. 513-419-7100, and let's talk to Adam in Mount Auburn. Good afternoon, Adam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about all of the extra spending that Trump seems to be doing or proposing with the wall on the Mexican border and hiring all the new ICE agents for immigration enforcement, and then all the money that's being spent for him to go to Florida every weekend. When is the Republican Party going to push back against that? Because that doesn't seem to hold with their fiscally conservative values.
That's a very good question.
You know, what is it,
$1 trillion infrastructure plan that he may be proposing at some point?
Right.
But go ahead, Ken.
And you know that if it was Barack Obama talking about a $1 trillion infrastructure program, the Republican Congress would be going nuts. I mean, who knows what's real, but what I keep hearing is that the Republicans will go along with Donald Trump as long as it benefits them. And, for example, when you get a new Supreme Court justice, when you get rid of the Affordable Care Act, repeal and replace, of course, they're nowhere close to that. Once you get true tax reform and perhaps tax cuts for businesses, things like that, when they get what they want, then they'll say, wait a second, is this the guy we want in the White House? I mean, I'm not talking about a palace coup or anything,
right.
But I noticed that I think until they get what they want, I think more and more, fewer Republicans will be willing to speak out on things like this excess spending, which Trump campaigned against.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, they're looking for certain things out of this administration. When they get them, it's going to be very hard for Donald Trump to keep this agenda of his going in a Republican Congress of fiscal conservatives.
What about the legality of the government paying for when Trump goes down to his place in Florida? Are there any issues surrounding that?
Legality? No. Yeah. I mean, he's the president of the United States.
He's the president of the United States. He's expensive.
He gets his security.
And he has a big family, and they're spread out all over the place.
And when his family goes to Europe, for example, apparently when the brothers Eric and Donald Jr. went to Europe or wherever they went on a business thing, they were followed with Secret Service protection. So
which costs money. And his wife lives in New York.
yeah.
along
well,
with
for
sun,
now, until the sun finishes the year.
Right,
school, until, yeah,
right,
but,
sure.
But it's just that, I mean, we see this with every president. Barack Obama campaigned against George W. Bush's executive orders, and then he put his own executive orders. Donald Trump campaigned against Obama's executive orders, and then he spent the first month putting his own in. It's we hear this over and over again, regardless of party, and a lot of us, I guess, just roll our eyes when we hear them so outraged at what the last president did. And of course, they find out ultimately go on repeating what their predecessors did as well.
Let's talk to Richard in Sharonville. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I had a question about the new Trump security advisor.
McMaster, yes.
He's a three-star general. He's going to keep his rank and his position. And he's also going to be security advisor. Does that mean he's going to pull down two paychecks?
No. I did not hear that he's not going to retire from that position. I know that, of course, General Jim Mattis, who's the secretary. I'm sorry?
And wear his uniform and mentioned a couple other previous generals that kept their uniform.
Well, Michael Flynn's kept his uniform on too, but he was retired as a lieutenant general in the Army. I don't know. I mean, you may be right. I'm not sure of that. I do know that, as I said, Jim Mattis, who's Secretary of Defense, and Jim Kelly, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, are former generals and they're retired. And I don't know.
I'm not sure about McMaster's. I don't know.
I don't know, McMaster singular, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, but let me just say one thing about him.
Yeah, he is retired, from what I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine otherwise, but let me just say one thing about him. I mean, he is, I don't know, again, what authority he'll have, what autonomy he'll have, right. But he is the real deal, widely respected, non-ideological. Yes. It seems like a great choice.
And
look, Michael Flynn was a great, was considered a great leader until, they got rid of him in the Obama administration because he couldn't play well with others. And then he would say these outlandish, insane things and lock her up and these inflammatory stuff that mm-hmm. people forgot what a good military guy he once was. But Michael Flynn is no longer.
And that's not McMaster's style at all.
No.
And also, there are policy issues with which he disagrees with.
Right, as you
Donald
were saying
Trump.
Earlier, he's not in total agreement.
They're not totally on the same page on things like NATO and the relationship with Russia and some other issues. So it's going to be an interesting relationship between the two of these.
But what's Pence? And when Pence is going around the country, no, we're not going to steal Iraq's oil. No, we believe in NATO. Pence is going around the country basically saying the antithesis of what Trump has campaigned on.
That's right.
So who knows? I mean, there's so many mixed messages coming out of that.
Right. Hey, real quick preview for us, Ken. President Trump's giving his an address to a joint session of Congress. I think it's Tuesday of next week. What are you expecting from that?
Well, it's going to, I suspect, I mean, given all the other addresses he's had and the speeches he's had, like at the CIA and Florida, it could very well be another campaign speech. Remember Joe Wilson of South Carolina yelling out, "You lie," when President Obama was giving an address to Congress. I wonder what the Democrats will do and how much pressure there will be on Democrats to either stay seated, boycott it, or whatever. But I expect another diatribe against the press and the Democrats, and the Republicans will love it and the Democrats won't.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, like you say, to see what the reaction is. I think they'll probably behave themselves, at least until it's over, and then they'll just go nuts.
Well, Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Only 2 months in? Only 1 month
only
in?
Only 1 month in. Month. Not even 100 days yet.
Nah.
Wow.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
sure.
Ken. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU Politics reporter Howard Wilkinson.